Welcome into the latest edition of the Mountain West Connection podcast. I am your host tonight, Jeremy Moss. No Chris this evening. Chris had some other stuff going on, so I'm handling this solo as we discuss everything Colorado State. And we do have a guest tonight, so it's not just me rambling on by myself for 30 or 45 minutes. We're actually bringing on Rich Kurtzman, who covers the Colorado State football and basketball for Examiner.com. He will hop on in a few minutes here to answer all the questions we have, discuss Jim McElwain's second year, the running back situation for Colorado State. They have a couple of good guys back there, Chris Nwoke, Donald Alexander, and possibly even Capri Bibb. If I can never say his name correctly, I always get it wrong. I already did the interview, but I think I got a guy mixed up from last year. Yeah, Capri Bibbs. He's been around for a couple of years, finally making his way to Colorado State after going to Snow College out of Chicago, where he played high school ball. So we'll discuss that a little bit, kind of what the expectations are for the year, which we're slowly becoming more optimistic that they could improve a little bit. So that's kind of discuss everything with CSU with Rich here come just a few moments. We'll just not much more to say here since I'm not going to babble off by myself. So we're going to bring in Rich right now and discuss Colorado State football. All right, and now we welcome in our guest for tonight to discuss all things Colorado State. We have Rich Kurtzman from Examiner.com, and I'm assuming he will bring us the everything I don't know about Colorado State and everybody else, because it's he follows the team a bit more than myself, I would say. So what's going on tonight, Rich?
Hey, how are you guys?
We are doing good. We are doing good. It's about, a month until fall camp about? So it's so close.
It's getting to be that exciting time of year again.
Yeah, it's hopefully for Colorado State. Well, that's a plan that they can get better than last year in their second year with Jim McElwain there. So let's just kind of get into it. We don't need to make our shows too much longer than they normally are. So basically got second year with Jim McElwain. What has kind of changed from – what do you think – set a full year now finally his own to know the players, bring in maybe a couple guys who came in earlier, Juca or – I mean, some guys to get going for his full spring with some of his guys they brought in. So during the spring, what kind of happened between, like, what changes or what did he kind of do during spring to kind of progress from this past year?
Well, one of the main things that I saw was the team's dedication to RAMU, which was the off-season strength and conditioning program that not only included the athletes improving their physical stature, but also their mental awareness and going into group therapy sessions and things like this to actually become more well-rounded men. And then as they went into spring training, you know, I heard from basically every player that I talked to during spring ball that the team was more focused. They were more together this year. And they were just way farther along in the scheme of things compared to last year, and really just understanding and grasping what McElwain and the entire coaching staff kind of expects from them moving forward and as they try to compete for a Mountain West championship.
I'm pretty sure it was McElwain last year. Wasn't he the one like took down signs or something around a practice field or in the stadium about champions or winning or something because they haven't been winning as much recently? Didn't he do that a lot when he first got there last year?
Yeah, there was a sign that Steve Fairchild had up, and I can't remember exactly what it says now because it's already, you know, 16 months.
Yeah.
Already, it's floated away because McElwain has his own sayings, and one of the biggest sayings that he says and the motto that overrides all is a commitment to excellence every day. And with McElwain, that means every day. That means in the spring, in the RAMU, in the spring ball, in spring practices, now into summer, he is asking his players to be committed to excellence every day on the football field, in the classroom, and away from school as well, to be role models for the university. And, you know, I think you're really starting to see a payoff. The guys are coming together, and you could really see the effort and the attention to detail in spring practices this year.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal. If they do the small stuff, hopefully it'll improving, carry over to the more important things on there. So basically during spring, there's a lot to be resolved at the quarterback position, because there was a lot of changes from even the past 2 years, from when Pete Thomas transferred to NC State, injuries, bringing new guys. You had Connor Smith, MJ McPeak played last year, but he's gone. You had Garrett Grayson. It comes down to Grayson and Smith. They both played last year. Pretty almost comparable stats. I'm looking at it right now. They both, Connor Smith was a little more accurate, but then he had more picks compared to Grayson, who had 3 interceptions compared to Smith's 6. They're kind of comparable across the board. Each had just right around 1,000 yards or so. So what's the difference? Because they haven't named a starter yet.
Right. Well, you know, McElwain has talked about over and over and over again, well, at least he did in the spring, because we asked him almost every practice, who's your starter? Have you named a starter yet? And he kept saying, no, it's still up for competition between Grayson and Connor Smith. And what he said that he was really looking for is for somebody to step up as the leader in the huddle and on the field. And what we saw through the competition was both quarterbacks stepping up and being better leaders. But I think what you saw, or at least what I saw personally, was that Grayson, the junior, was able to step up and be a leader a little bit quicker and a little bit more forceful than Smith. He's a little bit more of a vocal leader on the football field, and he's able to demand that his players are in the right place, that they're running their assignments, because, as Grayson explained, that now, after being in the offense for an entire year, not only him, but the entire offensive staff, or players, I should say, have a better grasp on McElwain's offense and what he wants out of them. So if we had to guess, we would say that Grayson was going to be the starter. Of course, they still haven't named one yet. So they're still definitely working hard in the offseason right now. But I fully expect when the season kicks off for Garrett Grayson to be the starter.
Okay, just mainly because the leadership, a little bit older, because that's where I could see it coming from, as it being a bit tougher for Smith, just because, not that's not much younger, but if he's looking for that, I guess that makes the most sense. So what is your, if you think Grayson's going to start, what do you think he does better than Smith does to earn that starting position?
Grayson, you know, like I said, he has a better grasp of the offense. So he's really understanding more and more where his receivers are supposed to be, which is only going to set him up to be able to connect with them more often and more efficiently. You know, last year and even the year before, I think what we saw was Grayson being a dual threat kind of guy, and that's something that he has over Smith, is the mobility factor and the ability to run. Those first 2 years when Grayson was playing, he liked to tuck and run when he was getting rushed, sometimes far too quickly. Now he's been working on staying in the pocket a little bit longer and progressing through reads. You know, the coaching staff is telling him, we want you to run, but not as often as you did last year, because that's how he broke his collarbone and therefore missed the rest of the season. You know, back in spring we talked to him. He has already had the surgery, and he said he's feeling very strong, and his arm was looking strong in spring too. His arm isn't quite as strong as Smith, but like I said, he's a dual threat kind of guy. He's got the leadership, and he understands the offense a little bit better than Smith. So I fully expect him to be the starter.
Is there a big drop-off in between the two? Like, if, say, there's injury come up or ineffectiveness, do you think the drop-off is that big between those two guys?
I don't think it's a great drop-off. I mean, you could see that McElwain really wanted that competition, but it wasn't that he was just making it a competition. They were closer than probably Grayson wanted them to be.
Okay. All right, so let's kind of move to the running back position. I've been critical for them for a while because they've been inconsistent, and they bring in a couple guys who don't do as much as you think they should do. So for my center, last year they still have Donnell Alexander, okay, back there running the ball. You also have, apparently, I guess, if Tommy Morris, not a ton. They also got Nordley Crappy, who finally is getting into the school after going to junior college route for not making the grades at Illinois. He's a was very good, set some records there. How do you think the running back spot will shape out? Will they just give a bunch of guys different carries? Is it Alexander going to be at the top? How do you think that's going to shake out with, so it looks like, at least 3 to 4 options?
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, McElwain said you'd really like to have one, but it's a great luxury to have multiple guys that can step in because you're going to need them throughout the season. That's his way of saying, basically, I'm not going to name a guy as my number one starter, especially not before the season starts, and probably 3, 4, 5 guys are going to get carries throughout the season. Now, personally, the way I see it shaping up is Chris Woke, the senior, becoming the starter, but really splitting carries with Donnell Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, if both of those guys can stay healthy, that's a great combination. I mean, Woke, he's kind of a bigger guy. He likes to run in between the tackles, and he's also shown the ability to get away from guys and go the distance at times, whereas Alexander is your more shifty guy. He's quicker. He's able to run inside the tackles, but I think he's more comfortable running outside the tackles. And then what else we saw in spring ball was Tommy Morris getting some carries as a real big guy, short yardage guy, able to pound the rock up the middle. And even, like you said, Capri Vips is going to get some carries here and there because McElwain said, you know, the legend of Capri Vips is finally coming out and we're finally going to see it. So I think he's excited as well just to see what Vips can do on the field. And he'll get some carries for sure.
Okay, yeah, it just seems kind of past looking what they both did last year. They just, at least in my area, they weren't consistent this past, you know, I mean, the past year because Alexander had a couple 100-yard games, and he had a game where 3 carries or 8 carries,
yeah, right,
stuff like that. So I think that if they're going to split carries, I think you're right. They need to either pick one guy who's going to be 60 to 70% of the carries. He's your main guy, but then you have whoever's the second guy, if it's Nwoke or Alexander, whoever that would be, need to be in and then give whatever's left over to more, like I said, to the other couple guys back there with, I got the name wrong when I mentioned you before, but with Kepri Bibbs. I said there's some other guy that used to be at Colorado State. I realized as I'm reading through, I'm like, that looks familiar, but that's not who it was. So it makes, it's a good sense that they do that. And if they can get a good running game going, it's going to obviously help whoever's at the quarterback and then also open up their passing game. Like with their, this guy just moves the wide receivers really quick. With the, once they pick a quarterback, it's better than bouncing back and forth. If I don't see that being the case, I think whoever they're going to have, they're most likely going to stick with them. But how do you see the wide receivers kind of panning out for who they have this year?
Oh, man. I mean, they've really added a ton of receivers. But really what you're looking at is they've had to go and attack guys or go and find guys that are 6'3 and 6'4 because all of their guys that are really going to be their main contributors this year are 5'9 or 5'10.
Like Charles Lovett?
Charles Lovett is going to be a starter.
Small guy.
I'm sorry.
I say he's a small guy. He's one of those guys who's 5'8. He's not even 200 pounds.
He is. Like. He's shifty, but the guy can play the game. He's got great hands. He's a deep threat, and he's also, even though being only 5'8", 179 pounds, he's a threat across the middle of time. Thomas Coffin should be your starter in the slot. And, you know, he's a very similar guy. He loves to go deep, but he can do crossing out to, across the middle. And he's going to be a good slot receiver for CSU this year. And that really opens up the door for your other outside guy. Is it going to be a Jordan Baden to step up? Who had a decent spring, you know. He connected with Garrett Grayson a good amount of times, not only in the Denver green and gold practice, but also in the spring game a week later. And there are other guys like Jordan White, who's 6'4", Austin Gray, who's moving over as a junior from safety to receiver. And Gray has been being with Grayson, connecting after practice, try to work on timing, try to work on route. So if I had to guess, I would say your 3 starters would be Gray, Thomas Kaufman, and Charles Lovett. But, of course, they're going to have multiple 4 receiver studs. They're going to have we're going to change receivers in and out all the time. So it's going to be exciting. I think they're going to rely on the running game more. But then you also have to look at their tight ends, Kevon Cartwright and Crockett Gilmore, who are both very big and very athletic and able to catch the ball as well.
So one last thing to offense. I was just checking really quick. With their actual looks, because they are going to be loaded out the offensive line. They have, if I'm reading this correctly, hopefully this is where I'm reading my information is not inaccurate, but let me, I have it here. Yeah, that's what I thought. I was making sure I was reading. They're not guys who are gone, but they bring back, was it four offensive starters from last year? Or five, actually, I think. Well, a lot of starts here, essentially. Is that going to, because they've had issues with that, because we saw with, was it Pete Thomas, when he plays, getting just crushed back there, running around, and now you have, bring back, yeah, you have six guys, five guys to a double-digit starts and four starters last year. And so that's obviously going to make the running game better, going to give the quarterback time to third. Do you think that's the main thing? A lot of people are like, oh, you got the quarterback, you got the wide receiver, they're the best guys. But if you're not blocking for them, if your quarterback gets pancaked every two plays.
Right.
Do you think that could be like a key position, perhaps, a key area? If they can protect and they can actually hang into games and not just turn the ball over or just make errors because they're being rushed.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, you know, anybody that's a true fan of the game will tell you, while running backs and quarterbacks and receivers are fun and flashy guys, the game is won in the trenches. I mean, it just is. That's where they control the ball. That's where they control the clock. And, you know, for Colorado State, the offensive line was a strong point last year. And honestly, it definitely should be a strong point this year as well. They, 2 years ago when Pete Thomas was a starter, they did have some, they had multiple injuries. Last year they had multiple injuries. This year these guys are returning. Ty Tambrillo and Jordan Gregor, who both had surgeries, knee surgeries, they actually got to work together in the offseason and tried to work through these injuries together and lean on each other, literally and figuratively. And then, I mean, the main guy is going to be Weston Richburg, who played center last year. He may move over to guard or tackle, even, McElwain said. He's going to be your leader on the offensive line. He's a very intelligent kid. He's very, very well-spoken. Anytime he talks to the media, he always has something great to tell us. Yeah, the offensive line should definitely be a strong point for CSU this year.
Is there an issue? I see the starters look to be strong. What about the depth? Because we all know that these are schools in this league that their depth is an issue at some positions. Just if there one or two guys goes down, would that be a huge drop-off?
It would be noticeable, definitely. You know, McElwain joked at his first national signing day last year that when he showed up, he wondered, where are all the big guys? Where are all the big boys? He's definitely made a conscious effort to recruit big men on both sides of the football. But
yeah, that's what he did at Alabama. He had all those big guys up front to do all the dirty work and make it easy for the quarterbacks and the big holes for the running back with all the guys they've had running the ball. So let's just switch to defense. We don't need to go position by position, but will the run defense be any better this year? Because that could be an issue.
Well, it's hard to say, but the linebackers are definitely going to be the strongest point on the defense. You look at four guys that are going to be four playmakers for the Rams. And, you know, when it comes to the defensive line, that's going to be the weakest point on the team for multiple years. And McElwain, even though he said in his first season that, you know, guys, coaches, that come in and they find all these junior college transfers, they'll be looking for a job real quick, is what he said, if they don't establish the foundation. But I think what he's done is he's found certain guys here and there that are going to be able to fill in that are already sophomores and juniors that have played a couple of years at the junior college level that can step in and play immediately. You look at Lance Dantani last year, who you know, now is with the Denver Broncos as a free agent. And he came over as a junior college transfer with 1 year of eligibility left. And he had a great season. McElwain's hoping that there's going to be a mix up front, at least on the defensive line, of younger guys that are his guys, as well as some junior college transfers that are going to help bolster that running defense. You know, it's still going to probably be a weak point for this team, but I think it also depends on how well these linebackers, Corey James and Shaq Barrett and who's the other guy? How well they can make plays. Oh, Aaron Davis, mm-hmm. When the other team is running.
So what about, because if they can stop that, you can't have teams do whatever against each other. One thing within the Mountain West, there's so many good quarterbacks within the league. You've got Brett Smith, Joe Southwick, David Carr, it's Carr, and then David Fells as well, the top two. How do you think the secondary would, just a daunting task for any team in the league, how do you think the secondary could stack up against those type of teams that want to pass the ball a lot?
Well, McElwain, you know, he continues to say that he's very confident in the depth of his defensive backfield. You look at Shaq Bell, senior starter, who's going to be returning, and at one cornerback, and most likely Richard Jr., Bernard Blake, will be starting at the other cornerback, although they've been talking about moving Blake to safety. You know, they honestly really are very deep in the defensive backfield. But there isn't a lot of experience yet. You know, a lot of these guys have a couple of games of experience here and there. There are going to be some growing pains, to be sure, but these guys are more athletic than the defensive backfield that you've seen in recent years from Colorado State.
Okay, so if there's a player overall, not necessarily in the defense, but on either side of the ball, that would you think is either poised to break out or somebody that you need to keep an eye on, who would that be?
Corey James, the linebacker. I think Corey James, you know, he was put on the College Football Performance Awards watch list last week. And even before that, I was saying earlier in spring, and even last year, I was telling some of the guys up in the press box, he's going to have a great season. The guy knows how to get after the quarterback from the linebacker position, but he also knows how to cover receivers out of the backfield. And if you look at it, as a redshirt freshman last year, he set a CSU record of 7.5 sacks. And I think he could definitely improve on that this year. And what McElwain said he really expects or hopes out of James is to be more focused and more consistent in his gap control, which is something that Coach Mack preaches very often.
Okay, yeah, I remember hearing him last year getting backfield all the time, so that's, if he can replicate that and get some other stuff, because 7.5 sacks is a first-year guy, it's pretty good there. So let's kind of go through the schedule really quick. We don't need to go each game, but obviously the first big game of the year is probably it's their biggest game. You can correct me if I'm wrong, when they play Colorado up at in Denver.
Oh, yeah.
How do you think, because Colorado thinks they're better than CSU, but that hasn't really been the case because they're pretty down as much as, if not worse than what Colorado State has been the past couple of years. How do you kind of think it would be, because they won last year? What do you think just kind of, we'll talk about the game for a little bit, what could go on or what do you expect a little bit this early on in the year, or we're still a month away, but you know what I mean? Kind of what do you expect in that first matchup?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is that both teams are down right now. I think Colorado State obviously has almost a year and a half jump start with CU just getting Coach McIntyre earlier this year. And, you know, CU is in a really bad place right now. Not that CSU is in a great place. Mm-hmm. I think no matter what, though, both teams always want to win that game. Like you said, first of all, it's a rivalry that dates back to the late 1800s. Second of all, CU, there's this sort of mentality that CU is better than CSU. And so it's a big deal for them to beat CSU every year, and when they don't, then, you know, it's really a big deal for their fans and for their coaching staff. So I think you're going to see both teams put out a great effort, but I think you see CSU pulling away with the win there.
Do you think Colorado, do they, just because they've always been in a better league, do they, I'm assuming they probably already know the answer to this, but do they look down to CSU even when they were good? Like when they had Bradley Van Pelt and Sonny Lubick there, do they always still look down just because, hey, we're in either in the Big 8, the Big 12, or now the Pac-12, and you've been in this whack in Mountain West forever?
Right, yeah, there's this superiority complex that kind of overrides. And you even saw it go into the basketball side of things last year, what CU's players saying, you know, Big Brother, who is Colorado, is going to beat up little brother, who is Colorado State. And, you know, whenever you go to the games, if you sit in the stands, there's a lot of that type of talk going on. CU's favorite chances. You know, we go to college, you go to state or something like that. So,
one of those things. Okay.
It's fun. It adds to the fun. It adds to the excitement. You know, it's the biggest game every year, college football game in Colorado, the biggest, most attended game. And it does create buzz, and it's good for college football in Colorado, which is still trying to grow every year.
Do you like that this first game's on a Sunday? Because it's pretty much, there's no NFL yet. It's probably the one of, I think there's that Louisville and Ohio game. That's about it. Do you like that it's all by itself on Sunday afternoon?
I love that it's the first game of the year. Every once in a while, they'll make it the second or third game of the year, and it's just not the same. As far as it being on Sunday, it was supposed to be on Sunday a couple of years ago, and they moved it back to Saturday last minute. So I'm still waiting to see if it'll be on Sunday. And if it is, I'm looking forward to it because they're going to have some more spotlight. And I believe it's on CBS Sports.
Yeah, CBS Sportsnet. So that's people know where to find it. They can find, because it's a game where, well, both teams aren't that great. I remember last year's game, it was pretty exciting for what was going on for the most part, even though the two teams may not be the highest level at the moment. But I was entertained last year because they're a pretty close matchup through most of it.
Yeah, definitely.
And then, okay, let's kind of move through here a little bit. Well, let's just go to the Alabama game really quick, just because it's something.
That's the next one.
Well, it's a 2 weeks on the road. We got Tulsa and Cal Poly, but actually, let's do Tulsa real quick. We don't need to discuss each one, but with their similar, that's kind of an offense they'd probably face in the Mountain West, more towards like Fresno State and maybe San Jose State a little bit. Mm-hmm. How do you feel comfortable-wise with that, with them running that fast pace? They're going to sling it around everywhere.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult for Colorado State to keep up with that type of offense. But of course, it's going to be a good experience for later in the year. And, you know, the Rams have historically been a bad road team, at least the last couple of years, specifically. If they come out and lay an egg against Colorado, oh, man, that second game is not going to be looking good. But if they can come out and get some momentum and beat Colorado, then they should be able to at least put up a fight. And they could probably, they could possibly win that game, even though it's, they're not going to be built for shootout-type games.
Yeah, they probably need to try to have the defense get some turnovers or limit some drives to keep it probably under 30 points to realistically get it. I mean, if they can 20, 28 points, that probably a way they can hopefully stay in that game. But then there's the Alabama game. We mentioned before I spoke, but I don't understand how – I get they're a huge underdog, but a 6-touchdown underdog, 41 points – what? That just seems like a cartoon number.
It's kind of ridiculous. But well, really, I mean,
what would you think? Like, if you were to place anything toward that, would you? I would probably take Colorado State to be within 41 points, because that means they're not going to get shut out.
I'm not betting that, and I'm not saying that you guys should be either. You know, listeners, fans, whatever. If that's your thing, then that's cool. 41 point spread is ridiculous. Take CSU to cover.
It's like I'm saying, like, I don't think they'll get shut out, but it's like they're not playing Colgate or the Citadel or Furman. Right. They're playing a team that has better talent than that. So if you're doing just for the heck of it, why not? But that just seems too much for any team. They could be the best team in the country, but I don't even think I could look this up really quick. I don't think Alabama beat anybody by that bad last year, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm not sure, actually. I don't see them beating CSU that badly, although it's almost certain that Alabama will win and probably handily.
But also, it is McElwain going up against his former coach and team. So maybe Nick Saban might say, okay, we'll hold off. Okay, I'm looking at last year's schedule really quick. Obviously, they smoked Notre Dame 42-14. They did have three games where they won by more than 41 points. Western Kentucky, Western Carolina, and Auburn, all 49-0, and then 52 zip over. Oh, it's not Western Kentucky, excuse me, Arkansas. So, yeah, they had three games where they won by 41 points or more. So they had the chance to do it, but Arkansas was a mess. Western Carolina's FCS and Auburn was just a joke, too. So it's just close. I wouldn't touch it, but I'm just thinking that's just way too much. Whatever.
I think the great thing for CSU is that it's going to be exposure. And it's still to be determined what channel it's going to be on. If somehow, some way it's shown on CBS, it would be amazing. Even if it's not, it should be on some TV, some national coverage, to where people are going to say, who is CSU? Oh, this is Colorado State. Okay, that's cool. And at least it's going to open people's eyes to, Colorado State.
At least for a moment. And then, because they'll probably mention, and those games are from the Mountain West, and they'll say, oh, you've heard of these other teams, so mention probably Boise State or Fresno State, kind of a mention to how what they've been doing or what they're going up against. And if they can even keep it respectable for a little bit, that would be even better. I'm assuming, I don't think it'd be on CBS, but I'm assuming I could see it being ABC Regional or like a ESPN or ESPN2 game.
Sure.
I don't know if it'll be a night game, but I don't know how the schedules all work out and everything, but because San Diego State, Ohio State is going to be on ABC Regional, and that's the top team. Almost San Diego State's probably a bit better than CSU at this point, but it's almost comparable. So it's kind of a model to look after. And they probably is Alabama in the Central Time Zone? Do you know off the top of your head?
I thought they were Eastern, but I'm not sure.
It's close. That's why I'm wondering if it'd be. I'm betting it'll probably be like a 4 o'clock Eastern kick, or maybe that afternoon game. But I bet it'll be on a ESPN, or I don't think it'd be on ESPNU, but I'd probably bet it could be on ESPN2, like that mid-afternoon, not the prime time, but right before it. But regardless, they're going to be seen. It's not going to be relegated to Fox Sports or anything like that. But
right,
just a good game if they can show up.
It's going to be great exposure for the team, especially after playing, after the Mountain West Network went down last year. And then they play Alabama again in either 2015 or 2017. So, this could be a tune-up for maybe they could actually put up a good fight in a couple of years. You never know.
Hey, they did get that Coleman Key the other day. He's supposed to be a pretty good quarterback, so maybe he'll be leading them to victory in Tuscaloosa in a couple of years.
Right? Hey, that'll be fantastic.
All right, so let's go through the league slate real quick to kind of really – just kind of bounce through this. So basically, we know for those who don't know her, I still need to look up every now and then. They're in the mountain portion of the Mountain West Division. So,
yeah.
You got Boise State, Air Force, New Mexico, Utah State. Well, I mean, fairly manageable teams, I would say. Boise, Air Force, and probably Utah State are the top, but Air Force isn't even really that. They've been kind of down. So they got it's an easy schedule, but it's not. Nothing too difficult, because on the other half, they got Hawaii and San Jose State, and they get San Jose State at home. So overall, their conference schedule is pretty well. For what they could have gotten, it's not as bad as getting, San Diego State or Fresno State on the road. They get San Jose State and Hawaii, and they are taking advantage of that fifth non-conference game. So out of what do you kind of expect out of that division? They get all their tough games at home. Their toughest game in conference, you got to say Boise State, but on the road they go to Utah State, and we don't know if they're going to be able to keep up because they lost Gary Anderson. They did promote Matt Wells from their OC to head coach.
Right.
I guess you got to like their schedule within league play to hopefully pick off a couple extra wins.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously the goal is to win the conference. I don't know if they're going to win the conference. They probably won't. But I think that the next goal is to win some games in your conference. Getting San Jose State at home is great, especially earlier in the year, because as we've seen the last few years, the fans, as the season wanes on and the team is performing poorly, the fans do not show up. So that should definitely help with some home field advantage, especially if they, you know, can win a couple of those first couple games and gain some momentum going into that San Jose State game. And then you look at Wyoming on the road. They always play Wyoming tough, you know, on the road or in Fort Collins. And I think one of the biggest wild cards when it comes to the Mountain West schedule is going to Hawaii, because it's such a far amount to travel. It's so far away. And like I said earlier, they're not a very good road team, unless it's Wyoming or Air Force, which is a close trip.
Yeah, 2 hour max.
Right. And then, you know, they come back for Boise State. Of course, that's going to be a difficult game, but it's a night game, and it's on national TV. It's on CBS Sports, which I think that Boise State game, where you look at it, it's the fifth to last game, and they will have already played CU and Alabama, which should be kind of measuring sticks. But I think when you're looking at the conference, Boise State obviously is your measuring stick. And if they can put up a good fight against Boise, it's going to bode well for the rest of the season, because then they have Nevada at home, at New Mexico, at Utah State, and Air Force at home. If they can somehow win three or even two of those games, I mean, I think they're going to be sitting pretty close to 500 this season.
So what do you think their expectations are overall? Because with that 13th game, they got to win 7 to, if they want to try to get to a bowl game, which they haven't done in a while. Do you think that's a possibility, or what do you think they have to do to reach 7 wins?
I think it's a possibility. I don't think it's an expectation yet. And that's kind of what I talked to Coach Mack about earlier last week in a phone interview about his goals. And he is very frank and he's realistic in saying that the team is still rebuilding. They're still rebuilding the program. They don't expect to go to a bowl game this year. They would love to. The fans would really, really love for them to go to a bowl game. But you look at Alabama getting thrown in the mix so late, and now you look at, like you said, they have to win 7 instead of 6 games. That just makes it that much more difficult to actually make a bowl game, even if it's one of those lower bowl games. I think that they can. I don't think that it's necessarily the expectation this year, but I think they'll get close. 6 wins, 5, 6, 7 wins is going to be right around where they're going to end up pinching.
Yeah, I see that too. I was looking through right now as you're going over to that. It's great stuff. But I could see, like, winnable games. Colorado's a winnable game. I'm not sure about Tulsa in there, but Colorado, Cal Poly, UTEP, Wyoming, Hawaii, New Mexico, and then maybe Air Force or Nevada, depending how those teams fare out. So I think they'll be close. They seem to get off that 3-win mark seem to be stuck on. I think they can. I don't think they'll do it, but I think they can get close.
Right. Yeah, I think they'll be close, and I mean, they went from 3-9 and for 3 years in a row under Fairchild to 4-8 last year, which was a slight improvement in record win-loss-wise, but I think you saw an improvement in intangibles, in learning, in teamwork, in fight, in all these things that weren't around in the previous years, and I think what you're going to see is another step in the right direction. I don't think necessarily it's going to be a giant leap of now they're going to win 8 games this year. They could. I don't think they will. I think they'll probably win 6 games, maybe 7, and get into a very low bowl game. And that would be fantastic for them. But I think the fact of the matter is that they just need to continue to progress and continue to improve, even incrementally.
Yeah, that's why I think if you see a team take a huge jump like that, it's like, hey, what happened? How did they go from 4 to 9 wins or something? So that sounds about right. If they can make that step in a couple years once McQuinn has his guys in there, who he wants, his own more than just one or two classes. He has like 2 or 3 recruiting classes. He's good to go. So that's why I you know, stuff can bounce their way. Injuries and stuff happen to either improve or hopefully not deep. Well, not deep roof, but you know, I mean, take a step back. I'm looking for the right word. Not deep. That's not even a word, but take a step back if they lose a couple guys or something. But I think that's about where they're at. And so 6, I'd probably say 4 or 5. I think 5. They got to get 5 because then you see the actual progression.
Right. I mean, 5 is a definite possibility. And it should be at least the first goal is to, you know, improve from last year.
Okay, so real quick, if there's a game that could be an upset, who do you think that could be on their schedule?
Who would see it? You could upset?
Yeah, like I would put in category, I'd say San Jose State, Boise State, or Utah State. I think those are 3 teams that are clearly going to be a favorite and realistically a chance because Alabama's not going to count. I don't see Colorado as a huge upset. If they win, it's going to – we know what they are, but – let's just take it to league play. Who do you think they could possibly trip up who might be looking past them?
I think if, you know, they can figure some things out early and get some momentum going down the middle of the season, I think when you look at late in the season against Utah State, if they're at 4 or 5 wins already, if they need 2 wins at Utah State and Air Force at home to get into a bowl game, I think they're going to really rally around Coach Mack and bring everything that they can to Utah State and try to win that game. I think that's one that if I had to pick this far out in the chance that CSU could, I think, you know, pull an upset off there.
Okay. Yeah, I could possibly see that. Because they've had those good games before. The Colorado State, they've played, or not, you know, I mean, Utah State, I should say, they've played a couple years in a row, and their overtime games a couple years ago and everything that have been tough. So, all right, man. I want to thank you for joining us. So we're going to assume close to bowl game, not quite there. Cover the spread versus Alabama and maybe beat Utah State.
And like I said last year, at the end of the season, you can go back and listen to this interview and you see how wrong I was.
Or hey, it could be very right if that running attack or something comes out. Well, hey, both ways. Listen to if we're awesome or if we mess everything up and they somehow go 1-12, which would be awful. But that's probably not gonna happen. So all right, so everybody, I'd like to just thanks for hanging out with us, man, and go Rams.
Yeah,
that's
that.
I actually say I pretty much agree with him that I think CSU should be better. Jim McElwain's getting the second season under his belt, first full cycle, spring recruiting, all that. He's kind of getting his own thing going on, and I think they should be better, but I still think it'll probably be another year or two before they can, well, at least another year before it got to go in steps, get better, more wins this year, bowl game next year, and then a year or two after that, hopefully compete for a division and maybe a conference title down the road. But yeah, that was Rich. Like I said, thanks for having Rich on. And once again, this is the MWCConnection.com podcast, or that's the website, the Mountain West Connection podcast. And so yeah, thanks for everybody who tuned in to listen to us discuss all things Colorado State, and just keep listening to the podcast.